You are listening to a Nerd Room podcast production. We the Nerd. Bunch of nerds.
Hey everyone, and welcome to Nerd Room. We talk all things Star Wars, Marvel, DC, and beyond. This is episode number 320. We're discussing Star Wars Month, Avatar 2, and a whole bunch of MCU news. I'm one of your hosts, Tim.
And I'm Carlos.
Carlos, my dude, it is a pleasure to be at the mic again with you this week. It is a little bit earlier than usual, but I cannot be more excited to talk about all this Star Wars stuff. It's Star Wars Day plus one, I guess, as you're listening to this, as we record. It's the eve of May the 4th with all this hype and moving into the month. I just got to talk some Star Wars, man. I just got to talk some Star Wars.
I know, I heard your intro, though, but fear not, dear listener. All the DC peeps out there, I know you guys are legion, and we gained a ton of followers in the wake of the Batman. I got you covered. If you want, I could really, if I didn't have to go pick up my kid tonight, I could take over this show with, like, 90 minutes of pure DC malarkey from all over the world. All over the multiverse, as it were.
Well, and I absolutely love that, because Carlos brings that nice yang to my yang, the MCU to my... or I guess the DC to my MCU. The important thing is here is that with this new format, we don't actually share what stories we're going to be talking about to make sure the other person's reaction is relatively raw. And so I don't know what he's talking about when I do the episode title. So you guys know what I want to talk about. And of course, we're going to get some of that brilliance from the goddamn Batman himself. And guys, of course, it being Star Wars Month, we're going to talk about that. There's MCU, there's Avatar, there's DC, there's everything in the world of nerd. And we're not going to waste any more time chit-chatting here, Carlos, because we got to get over to This Week in Nerd. All right, everyone, welcome to This Week in Nerd, where we discuss the latest and the greatest from the world of nerd in our new rapid-fire delivery. And Carlos, you're going to start us off with somewhat of a somber note here this week.
Yeah, we heard about the somewhat unexpected passing of an absolute lion and legend in the comic book industry in Mr. Neil Adams. Neil Adams is credited with being side by side with Denny O'Neil for putting the dark back in the Dark Knight and bringing Batman to the character that we know and love after kind of the campy 50s and 60s. But man, his contributions to the industry cannot be understated. Mm-hmm. He worked for both companies, worked for DC, did some work for Marvel, was a bit of a thorn in their side because he was such a champion for creator rights. He's the guy directly responsible for the Schuster and Siegel families getting the credit that they deserve with the Superman books. And he's just done so many iconic things. Like with Green Lantern, Green Arrow, he not only had a huge hand in crafting the first storyline to be published without the comic code's authority, with a story about Roy Harper, Speedy, being addicted to heroin, and just because they felt it was an important story to tell. And mm-hmm. then that segued to them talking about racial issues in the United States and directly led to him being a co-creator for Jon Stewart, and just so many incredible accomplishments on top of drawing some of the most killer images that to this day, you walk into any store and you go look at the comic book t-shirts, and you have a pretty decent chance of finding an X-Men shirt with his art on it, an Avengers shirt with his art on it, and definitely a Batman shirt with his art on it. So, yeah, Mr. Adams, you will be missed. He was an interesting cat to be around at conventions. I had the fortune to be in his presence a couple times, and it was always interesting to see him interact with folks and how he'd carry himself. But at the end of the day, there's no denying the contributions that this man had to the comic book industry. So if you love modern comic books, you owe a debt to Mr. Neil Adams.
Yeah. What a wonderful rundown there from you. It's great to hear kind of that celebration of his work and his importance in the industry. And, you know, as we're getting older here, Carlos, it is very difficult because you're seeing some of these titans, they're passing away, you know, and it's weird for me that people that you grew up with or people that you know that's had such a profound effect on an industry that is so near and dear to all of us, that these guys are starting to pass away. And it's very, very sad. But the thing that I try to reflect back on is that they're leaving such a powerful legacy behind. And someone like Neil Adams, as you just so eloquently run down his contributions, is he's another one, right? So rest in peace and all the best and condolences to his family in this difficult time.
Yeah, well said, man. Well said.
Yeah, so difficult to follow some of those notes, and we struggled with this in the past, is transitioning off such a loss inside of the community. But let's head over to Star Wars. You know, I was screaming about it here at the top of the episode, and as we enter into May, it has become, alongside of December, months of Star Wars. And this one in particular seems very important, as it seems that the conversation is shifting back to focusing around Star Wars. It has been hit and miss on the podcast for quite some time, outside, of course, of that Obi-Wan trailer that we talked about a few weeks ago and the Book of Boba Fett. But it seems that Star Wars is about to take a real hold on the world of nerd. Not only are we moving and through May the 4th, Star Wars Day, as it's been dubbed, as we walk through this podcast, but it's also the month of not only celebration, but the debut of the highly anticipated Obi-Wan Kenobi show towards the end of this month. And Carlos, we're not going to spend too much time here because it's going to come. All of that is coming. We've got potential announcements coming out of May the 4th. Who knows what Lucasfilm is going to throw in front of us. Lego collecting. I'm sure Hasbro will be out there with reveals that are surely going to be on everyone's pre-order list. But I got to ask you a question here, Carlos. With Star Wars coming back to the as you put it from time to time, the general zeitgeist of nerd, what is something, or what is the thing you were most anticipated for in Star Wars this year inside of 2022?
Oh, it's got to be the Obi-Wan Kenobi show. Like, there's no denying all the cool things that'll bring. You know, the kid has some pretty amazing things on pre-order there. And it's so funny. I get DMs from Troy asking if, hey, has she ordered this? And has her this figure come in? And I was just like, God, I need to put the two of you just in contact with each other and take myself out and my wallet as the middleman in these shenanigans. But yeah, like, a couple of her pre-order things are pretty cool that she's got coming down the pipe. So there's a few collecting things that I'm actually really looking forward to. But as far as the media projects go, actually, you know what? I'm going to let you have Obi-Wan Kenobi. For me, it's going to be, and it was one of my news notes too, Fallen Order 2. Which we may or may not get this year, but word is that it's going to be next gen only, which was a bit of news this last week or so. So fingers crossed that if we don't get the game, that we at least get the first looks at it and we get a bit of an idea as to what time period it's going to be in, and a bit of an idea as to where Cal Kestis is in the timeline of a galaxy far, far away. So that's what I'm going to take for my 2022, is if not the game, which I doubt we'll get, that we get at least a few bits of confirmation as to what it's going to be, what it's going to be all about, and just kind of the scope of this thing and a bit of an idea as to when it's going to be in hand, because Fallen Order 2 is long overdue.
Yeah, definitely for you guys. And I know how much that Cal Kestis is near and dear to you. Obi-Wan Kenobi, yes, is up there for me, but I'm gonna throw a little bit of a curveball in there, because these shows, they come and go. It's going to be good. We all know it's going to be good. But Celebration. Now, although I have a ticket upstairs, it arrived via DHL or whatever it is, the delivery service, and I'm looking at it, I'm saying, I can't go. So if anyone out there wants a ticket, I have it. But it is going to be the fandom experience, even though I have to experience Celebration from afar, it's going to be the fandom experience around Celebration. There's lots of great YouTube channels that are going to have awesome coverage. I know quite a few people going down, like our friend Rob Cast, and it's just kind of experiencing that and Obi-Wan all at the same time. It is always and consistently has been a weekend that has revolved around Star Wars, and they've been really good in the last, well, at least pre-pandemic, on letting us, those experiencing from a distance, in on it a little bit. Now, not as good as DC fandom, but at least we're hopefully going to get the trailers, and we're hopefully going to get that experience of people walking around the floor and videoing the new Hasbro stuff and what's coming from this, that, and the other thing inside of Star Wars. And so it's going to be that fan experience that really has me hyped for the end of this year.
Very cool, man. Very cool. I actually have a bit of a Star Wars news note, and it's from our good friend Rick Villanueva. You can't spell villain without Villanueva. And you can't look at Diego Luna without also thinking of our buddy Rick. And he let me know that the Bespin Bulletin maybe leaked it out that Andor Season 2 is filming this fall, which was massive news to me and actually got me hyped. Yes, I got some positive feedback on Andor. It got me kind of hyped for Andor because that means that there's something special cooking with Andor Season 1 and that they've got a story to tell and a journey they're going to take us on. And I loved where they took him and what the final outcome was for the story within Rogue One. But if it makes, if this series through Season 1 and now Season 2 makes that final sacrifice all the more poignant in Rogue One, like, amazing. Like, I'm there for it. So yeah, Andor Season 2. Maybe breaking news to a few folks out there. It certainly was to me when I got that DM.
It's definitely news to my ears here as we speak. And so, interesting, Season 2 before we've seen much or anything of Season 1, and I believe Season 1 is like 11 episodes. Now, they might be shorter, but I do believe it is about twice as long. I might be wrong, but I do believe it is about twice as long as a normal run of 6 or 8 episodes, whatever it is. And so there's a lot of story to tell. And from the production leaks and some of the sets that we did see roaming around Twitter and that, it looks like it is big budget. Like, they did not spare any expense, if I can steal a word from the upcoming Jurassic franchise, in this production. And so the fact that they're already moving into a Season 2, like you said, gets me hyped for what potentially could do in Season 1. But it does kind of leave you thinking, well, it's definitely not going to be a definitive end to Season 1. It's definitely not going to bleed directly into Rogue One. They've left themselves some space there.
Mm-hmm. But it's one of those things. It's kind of like Peacemaker or the Penguin show spinning out of the Batman before we actually see those projects. Mm-hmm. It just speaks to how confident the people behind it and the studio are in what they're doing. So, yeah, to be honest, like, ironically, that was the thing that got me the most excited about Andor, was the fact that they're like, we got something special here. Let's move forward with a Season 2. So,
yeah, it would definitely be nice to see Lucasfilm have a confident footing in a property outside of The Mandalorian, as they've kind of juggled things on the big screen and they haven't really hit the ground running with any other series that has a bit of longevity to it. We do know this Obi-Wan series is a limited series. It's going to tell a finite story inside of Obi-Wan. And so it's cool to see that there's growth. There is a stronger foundation for something outside of The Mandalorian. Hey, I love The Mandalorian, but let's see some other stuff out of the Star Wars universe. So let's swim over, my dude, to another franchise underneath that giant Disney umbrella. And let's talk about Avatar 2. Now, a few weeks ago, we talked about Avatar when we did our little bit of our Beyond episode. But down at CinemaCon, kind of after we discussed everything of the first 2 days last week, they did give a title and did show some of the footage for the Avatar sequel coming out this December. And it's called Avatar: The Way of the Water. Now, they released a short synopsis. I guess it takes place about 10 years, a decade or so after the adventures of Avatar. And we have Sully and his family trying to survive, trying to do new things. And, of course, trouble follows them wherever they go. And so here we go. We got our Avatar adventure set up here. Quite a ways out. Looks like he's going to have kids. But, Carlos, talk to me about this title, The Way of the Water. We knew it was set underwater. It does look like it's going to be another 3D experience, as everyone down at CinemaCon that was treated to the footage were all given 3D glasses. So it's back, man. But I will say, I'm kind of anticipating it a bit more. As the hype builds, and there is a trailer coming attached to Doctor Strange, as you speculated a few weeks ago. So we're only a couple of days out from seeing the first trailer for Avatar 2.
Yeah, cool. Like, I have a hard time with this one. And it's just like, I don't have strong feelings on Avatar at all. It's just a thing that's there, right? And it's, you know, there's times I've wanted to watch Avatar, but I'm like, it's really long. So I just watched Michael Jackson's Earth Song video and I was like, cool.
Got it.
I enjoyed that a bit more in 3 minutes. So Yeah, by all accounts, everything I've heard about the trailer from the folks that saw it is that it's very impressive, and I'll be curious to see what that re-release of Avatar 1 does in September. But
is that going back into theaters?
Yeah, it's going back into the theaters.
Oh, and they're chasing Kevin Feige even further away.
Yeah, and I guess it's going to be a fairly wide release too in September. So the marketing machine will be fully in gear for Avatar and Avatar 2. And yeah, who knows? Who knows? Like, I'm not one to slathe myself in blue body paint, but maybe those folks are out there. And yeah, if Avatar is your jam, then yeah, you know, here's your time to celebrate. But it's conceivably going to be a Disney Plus for me, to be honest. But we'll see.
Yeah, especially that time of year. I don't know. Just not for me. But I know there's lots of Avatar fans out there. Or at least one Avatar fan in Ian. So there's going to be hype somewhere. It feels so much like a Disney property that it being a previously Fox property just feels wrong. So yeah, let's see. We've got Avatar every 2 years for the next like decade. So we'll certainly get our Avatar fill in the next little while. I'll be like north of 45 by the time we see these sequels roll out.
Yeah, it's just such a weird one, right? Because I kind of saw it the once in the theater, and then I think I ended up seeing it a second time because I had a buddy who just like had to see it in like the premium format and everything else. And if I'm not mistaken, like the IMAX version of it had extra footage, so that was the selling point. So yeah, I kind of saw it like the two times, and I've had zero desire to revisit it since.
Yeah, every time I talk about Avatar, I say the same thing. I still have my Avatar Blu-ray inside of the plastic wrapping it came in.
Yeah, but yeah, it is what it is, man. Avatar. But I'll tell you about a movie that I am excited for, and that's Barbie, the movie. With Margot Robbie, Greta Gerwig, Simu Liu, Ryan Gosling. This thing is shaking out to be a banger.
What a cast.
Yeah, and I thought it was pretty cheeky for Warner Brothers to put it right up against the Oppenheimer film. So it's like, yeah, Christopher Nolan, you know how you left us and you went to do your fully white man cast movie? Well, we're going to put this female-led movie with a nice big diverse cast right up against your Oppenheimer film. And so I thought that was funny and cheeky, and obviously, and it's a good date because it's total counter-programming, so... You know, there'll be people that one of those two films doesn't appeal to, so they can go see the other one. But there was a lot of hand-wringing and consternation about the fact that the Aqua song is not going to be in the movie or in the trailers or anything like that. And people were super upset about this. However, I got to let folks know that in the 90s, Mattel went into absolute war with that band over that song. And there was a bunch of pretty brutal lawsuits back in the day because Mattel was unhappy about the lyrics of the song and how they felt it portrayed Barbie. And then also the music video and how it conveyed and sexualized their character and whatnot. But Mattel actually ended up losing those lawsuits because there's parody laws in the U.S. that this Aqua song and the video were covered under. And so, yeah, Mattel was furious and they actually tried to appeal it. And then they basically saw that they had no chance of the appeal. But as a PSA for our listeners, because I had a bit of a back and forth with a couple of them just who were totally unaware. So I thought, you know what? This can be a news note. That is why you will not hear that song in the Barbie movie.
That's hilarious, man. No idea here that there was massive lawsuits. I can see why Mattel wouldn't want one of their crown jewels being kind of taken all over the place in a parody sense back in the 90s. But on that Barbie movie, I guess they released the first photo of it, Margot Robbie in her Barbie car. Barbie is huge around my house here, not both in play form with Barbies and cars and RVs and planes I got parked out front here, but also... There's a couple Netflix series that my oldest is watching right now, and she absolutely loves them. And so I showed her a photo of Margot Robbie. I said, there's a Barbie movie coming out. I don't know what it's rated. Is it going to be something consumable for my eldest? Or is this like a PG-13 type thing where they're going to push the limits a little bit of Barbie?
I don't know. Given the cast and the director, I'd kind of say it might be a little spicy, but...
Yeah.
But it could be a Shrek where they make it for kids, but it's got loads of adult humor that's safe enough that kids can watch it, but yet randy enough that adults have a chuckle. So yeah, we should take our two daughters, yours because she loves Barbie and mine because she used to, but loves Margot Robbie.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Well, there it is. Let's put it in the calendar, man. I think Barbie is definitely something I want to get the kids back into the theater on that. And like I said, it's quite popular in the house right now. And showing her that picture, she was like, "Whoa, Barbie." Well, man, before we get into like any crazy MCU, I've got a whole long laundry list of MCU stuff. Let's hear a few more from you.
Well, speaking of things to take your daughters to, one that I know might be an opening night type venture for your family is the DC Super Pets. And DJ himself dropped a pretty funny little trailer today on the internet and gives us a bit of the story as to, the pet of probably Lex Luthor ends up taking out Superman, and it's up to Crypto to round up his pals. But yeah, this trailer was hilarious, and I love the play between Dwayne Johnson's Crypto the Superdog and Kevin Hart's Ace, who is shaping up to become Ace the Bat Hound over the course of this trailer. And yeah, it looked absolutely charming, got a few genuine laughs out of me, and I quite liked the style that they went with the animation where the pets are the focus, but the superheroes look kind of cool, and they did some funky things with the costumes too, because you know what? Why not? So yeah, DC Super Pets, I think it's going to be a bit of a surprise banger. John Krasinski as Superman, can't go wrong.
Absolutely not. Look, I showed this trailer to the kids, and there was a question mark even on this, and even though I had showed this to them not too long ago, but all of a sudden it's like the biggest thing in our house right now. Is the fact that DC is putting out a show with pets in it. They absolutely loved it. There's a movie, I can't remember the name of it, with Kevin Hart and a few others, about dogs and all that in New York. And it kind of has a similar vibe to that. And with DJ at the forefront here, big happy birthday to our man DJ too, that just rolled through another birthday. Look, them moving this up into July, brilliant move, I think. Family-friendly summer movie, this again exposing kids to more and more DC. There's inevitably going to be a lot of humor in there that is for the adults, my guess, and there's going to be probably a really good story in there for the kids. And seeing things like Wonder Woman, Batman, Superman, these type of things in pet form, my kids are going to be all over this. Look, my youngest is at that age where it's like, okay, we can probably take her to the movie theater. This might be her first big screen movie.
Which is amazing. Yeah. Oh, man. So, that might be another like dual family owning for us.
I think so. That's four quadrants that DC is hitting this year. You know, there's lots of talk about them moving films out and here and things going there and there. But at the end of the day, they're appealing to us hardcore Batman fans. There it is with the Batman. You got DC Superhero Pets or whatever it's called?
Yeah, Super Pets. Yeah, Super DC Pets. Super Pets.
And then later on, we get a few other things, right? With Shazam Fear of the Gods, it's a little more a comedic take on things, a little lighter. Like, you can't go wrong. You can't go wrong. And freaking Black Adam.
I know. Yeah, no, you nailed it there, where there's kind of something for everyone. And, you know, DC Super Pets, like, folks might turn their nose up at it, but this is the exact thing that will turn this generation of kids into the comic book readers and the folks that are supporting these properties in the future. So yeah, it's all good, and it's a nice little piece of succession planning and good little bit of, a gateway for a new audience. So I'm here for it. I love the fact that they have a big budget animated feature with this freaking Super Pets ready to go.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah. But things that might not be ready to go, rumor has it. There's a few rumors swirling. I thought I'd touch on it because it was in the news, but there has been zero confirmation after two, coming up 3 days, from any kind of reputable trade source or the studio themselves. But there were some rumblings that the Wonder Twins saw a cancellation. But, right up until a few hours before we recorded, I was kind of poking around to see if, the Hollywood Reporter or Variety or any kind of outlet had reported on this thing. And yeah, it was all just fan media that had kind of touched on it, and it originated out of a fan site. So Yeah, I don't know if this has any truth to it, so I thought I'd just touch on it and bring it up. But yeah, it felt like a bit of a weird one, though, given the timing.
Especially after they just announced some casting and HBO Max movie, I believe it was. And so it could be part of a larger reevaluation of what goes to HBO Max and how they're doing this DC stuff with some of the restructuring and notion that they were looking to rebrand DC in a way or get creatively aligned in some capacity a bit more. And so it could be confusion as to, you know, we're moving things around, we're putting this back onto the pre-production, or let's go back to the drawing board a bit with these type of things. But I don't imagine them canceling outright anything. Like, I might be totally wrong, but stepping back and looking at what DC is doing more broadly when it comes to TV and film, having anything come and go, it just hasn't been them for the last little bit, right? They've been very, very consistent with developing certain projects and seeing them through. And yeah, I don't know. It kind of feels odd to me.
Yeah, same. And I would have thought that after this amount of time has passed, like we've had a weekend and everything else, that we would have got some kind of confirmation. So much like with so many things in fandoms, the sky has fallen and the smallest nugget becomes an absolute truth. But something that is absolutely true is that a couple of the DC CW shows are coming to a close. Mm-hmm. So Legends of Tomorrow, after 7 seasons, which is a pretty tremendous run, and Batwoman, after 3 seasons, are both being canceled by the CW. And this, I think, falls into what you were talking about shoring up the brand and making sure there's a bit of consistency with the quality of the product that's being put out. And, you know, I watched 5 seasons and some change of Legends of Tomorrow and pretty much 2 seasons of Batwoman. So I think I can put forth an opinion in saying that, you know, it's not great TV. But at the end of the day, if these shows were massively popular and more importantly, profitable, because one of the things that has been overlooked in the conversation is that the DC CW shows, the primary place that they actually make their money is in secondary sales to other networks and to other streamers. And like Arrow, that is why it went for so long. And in fact, those last seasons, there wasn't a demand to watch it on the CW, but the international demand for the show was so huge that they basically paid Stephen Amell the sun and the moon to have him come back and squeeze a few more seasons out of that. So, but if those audiences and if those markets aren't there for Legends of Tomorrow and Batwoman, it just doesn't make financial sense for the studio to keep going. Because, like, let's face it, it's big business. If the show was about a clown juggling soup cans, but it made tons of money, they would make it. So there's lots of attributions being placed on this stuff, and it's like, that's just silly. It all just comes down to money. And honestly, I'm not sad to see them go, because I don't think that either one was a quality product. However, I am sad to see 2 Canadian productions close up shop, and some of our countrymen maybe be out of work for a bit until the next thing fires up. So hopefully that's sooner than later. But yeah, just my 2 cents on it. Like, honestly, a lot of the discourse around that, like, just look at the other shows that the CW and the streamers that it supports are putting out. And I don't think it has anything to do with any social or political reasons. It's just purely money and making sure that you're not doing harm to your IP. So, yeah.
Look, shows come to an end all the time. 7 seasons, like you said, not many shows get 7 seasons. Like, your top tier ones get those 7 to 10 seasons, and usually by the end you're kind of feeling like, yeah, we probably went two or three seasons too long on some of these. You can even say that about one of my favorite shows of all time, The Office. That probably went too long. And when I look back at these CW shows, although never watching them with any consistency, they have supported the CW for like the better part of a decade in some of those high-end time slots for those demographics that are super important for the finances of a company. And so you look at Arrow and The Flash and The Legends of Tomorrow, Supergirl, everything that they've done is pretty wild. And you look at what they were doing on TV kind of in parallel with the early stages of the MCU and these crossover events that they were doing and bringing these shows together. So they broke some pretty wild ground in their early days. And you guys, a lot of guys out there really shed praise on a lot of these shows. And I think it is what it is. You're going to see turnover. You're going to see this stuff come down, and you're probably going to see most of those original quote unquote Arrowverse shows come to a close here in the not too distant future. And a whole new swath of things being put to either the CW or HBO Max inside of that DCIP.
Yep. No, well said. Yeah, it's not, you know, something ends, something begins.
Exactly.
As they say in The Witcher. So that's that's what we do. Just look forward to the next thing because you know it's coming. Too much money to be made.
Exactly. Exactly. With a great IP too. Legends of Tomorrow. Look, I watched the first season, never got past that, but I was immensely surprised it went as long as it did.
Yeah. Totally. Totally. Nobody expected that. So, yeah. And you know what? The only thing that I'll bring up just to throw some different flavor into our show, because we like to be the beyond, the Elvis movie was screened. And you know what? The trailer, that first trailer blew me away. Like I love the way it was cut. I love the story they were telling. I love some of the things, that they're looking at touching on, and very much like the trailer conveyed. Some of the feedback from these first reactions is that it's a story about the United States through the 50s, 60s, 70s, but told through the lens of the guy that was at the center of the pop culture for that whole time, being Elvis Presley. So that'll be an amazing thing to see. But the movie was screened for one Priscilla Presley, who had rave reviews about the movie,
wow,
about how accurate it was, not only Austin Butler and how well he captured the essence of Elvis, but just in how truthful the story was and how you could see the heart of Baz Luhrmann on the screen and how much passion was put into this project. And also she sang the praises for Tom Hanks's portrayal of Colonel Parker. And she's like, you know, I lived through some of that stuff, and it felt pretty accurate to some of the things that I saw and experienced. So to have her, who had a bird's eye view of the man and his career from the time that it lit fire and took off into the stratosphere until the bitter end, I don't think you could ask for any higher praise. So
what was that trailer attached to? No Way Home?
Yeah, that's where I saw it on the big screen for the first time.
And that was one of those trailer experiences that I'd not seen anything. I'd heard rumblings of an Elvis movie, but like it was one of those rare trailer experiences where you experience it in the theater for the first time. I was like, what is this?
Yeah. Oh yeah, man. Like it blew me away. Like I was a pretty big Elvis fan growing up, like kind of high school, post high school. Like he was my dude. And, yeah, this trailer just brought back all those old feelings. And, you know, I'd be busting out that 68 comeback special in the Aloha from Hawaii, but I have them on VHS, so I don't have a way of playing them. But, yeah, it hit all the right notes, and it was a hell of a trailer. So, and being on No Way Home, it caught a ton of eyeballs. So I'm curious to see how this one does.
Well, before I go to the MCU, I just want to stick inside of the Beyond for one moment. And there's a nice little MCU connection with this little piece here. The new Olivia Wilde directed psychological thriller Don't Worry Darling got its first trailer. Now it stars Florence Pugh. We'll know her as Yelena from both Hawkeye and the Black Widow movie. And it's got Harry Styles and Chris Pine and a whole bunch of other people that reside inside of our universes here that we talk about. Gemma Chan is in it as well from Eternals. I saw this trailer, Don't Worry Darling, and it's like this 1950s weird thriller thing about what I'm assuming is the Americans testing weird stuff and all the stuff happening. I thought it looked really cool for kind of an original movie, something that is very different. The cast is unbelievable.
Oh,
and
yeah,
it just looks really good. Like it looks like this weird twist on what was going on back in the 50s and all that, the secrecy. And it just kind of hit me when I saw it online. I was like, what is this? Never heard of it. This cast looks amazing. This story really hooked me in with the trailer. So I'm kind of digging with what I'm seeing there with some of these original movies that are going to be dropping this year.
Yeah, and Olivia Wilde crushed it with the direction. Like, I loved the angles of so many of the shots that they used. And speaking of angles, there is some racy things that I never thought I would see
yeah,
in a big budget movie full of Hollywood stars, let alone in a trailer for a
man,
big budget
there was,
movie full
yeah,
of Hollywood stars.
Hide your children's eyes for some of it. Like, why are they doing this? Man, that was like, that was like a Red Band trailer.
Yeah, you're not going to be seeing this trailer attached to Doctor Strange this week, nope. I'll tell you that. But yeah, I was pretty impressed, and I'm curious to see what she brings, and I think she's quite the talent behind the camera, and yeah, like you said, she's assembled an incredible cast for this thing, so yeah, it should be cool. Should be cool, and yeah, props to WB for doing these movies that traditionally only someone like A24 would take a swing at, so...
Yeah, yeah, really looking forward to these sprinkled in amongst some of these larger franchises like the MCU. Now, the MCU is going to consume probably the back end here. We've got things like Moon Knight coming out. The final episode will be out as this podcast drops. We've got the Multiverse of Madness coming out this weekend. But there's also some things kind of churning in the background with the MCU and its release slate. And one of the questions I have here to pose to you, Carlos, is... The MCU was built on the back of connectivity, a single narrative driving through many different franchises that brought variety and character, but also a cohesive story. Now, when you look at what we're getting here or what we've gotten inside of Phase 4, your Shang-Chi, Eternals, No Way Home, Multiverse of Madness coming up here, and we've got a few other films that are going to be dropping inside of 2022, and then some other films that we know of inside of 23, including Thor Love and Thunder that we talked about last week. We've got maybe Black Panther coming out, Wakanda Forever ever this year. But as we get into 23, we're starting to see some films swapping around here with the likes of Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania, switching spots with Captain Marvel 2, now called Marvels, with Ant-Man and the Wasp actually moving up 5 months into that February 2023 slot, and Captain Marvel 2, or the Marvels, now pushing out to July. And with rumors kind of swirling around the internet, no foundation to them, but that the slots that Thor Love and Thunder and currently Black Panther reside in, being July and November, that's not 100% firm either. I don't know if all of that is going to happen, specifically with Black Panther and Wakanda Forever. Now, slipping of the slate is relatively normal. We've seen this a lot, both on Marvel, DC, Star Wars, all of it is all happening. But the question I want to pose to you after that really long ramble there was, or is, with the whole MCU built on connectivity and the ability to swap movies around, like Marvel's and Ant-Man and the Wasp, maybe seeing Black Panther slip out, is the idea or concept of connectivity and the dependence of watching these in sequence as important anymore? You could effectively watch Eternals, Shang-Chi, maybe now Ant-Man and the Wasp, Captain Marvel 2. You can probably watch a lot of these in isolation, given the fact that they're kind of being batted around a slate. And watching one after the other maybe isn't as dependent. Is this a sign of Marvel telling less big connected stories and more isolated stories, in the sense that you get a couple films or a couple TV shows that connect, but not everything? Like, what's going on with this? Is there anything to read into this, or is this just moving around because it's difficult to get all the production stuff done?
Well, they're changing their date, so clearly they don't have a plan.
They don't have a plan.
They're going to lose their audience. No, this is a good thing. I think that there's going to be a bit of a step back for the interconnected narrative throughout everything, but I think certain pieces will have strong connections and build to things.
Yeah.
Where, you know, maybe some of the things you set up in the Eternals and then doing Thor, Love, and Thunder will set up something that happens and falls out of the Guardians of the Galaxy, yeah, and you have a bit of a cosmic-y event, mm-hmm, and then you have Moon Knight, and then whatever happens in Blade, and, well, we met the Black Knight in the Eternals, so then the Black Knight comes to the forefront, and we can do something with the Midnight Suns, and... I think it's good, and by all accounts, with Doctor Strange, there's a little bit more of Sam Raimi's fingerprints on it, and that's just a positive for me. If they're moving more towards a filmmaker type of direction, that's a good thing. So, I'm here for it, and it also gives people a bit of breathing room. Because with Disney Plus coming into the fray, like, I'll tell you right now, from kind of talking to people, you have people that are invested that will consume everything and want to see every single piece and revisit it and know all the minutia, but there's people that just can't find the time or to keep track of everything or to invest in watching the shows as well as all the movies and everything else. So I think this is good so that you can still appeal to that wide audience when your big event movies come out, and they're, you know, somebody like my wife who hasn't watched all the shows can go in and have enough of the big pieces to get through and really enjoy the Midnight Suns event. Cause it's like, yeah, Moon Knight wasn't for her, but she saw Blade and I don't know, whatever else, the Ghost Rider reboot, and she can watch that and really enjoy it and off you go type of thing. So with them doing more, which I think is a positive, I think they also have to have a bit of flexibility. Yeah. So I don't know. I like the new bag, and like you said, everybody's kind of in the same boat at the mercy of the VFX houses. So you're going to have to move dates around. And I don't see any way that Black Panther comes out this year.
No.
Seeing as they just wrapped like what, a month ago, if that.
Mm-hmm. And there's probably a lot of VFX stuff there. And does it make sense? Like, is the story there that doesn't factor in reshoots, right? That is always banked into the back end of some of these things. And so I'm right there with you. I'm seeing the grander picture of the MCU is less about a single narrative and more about, like you do in the comic books, you have a couple books that tie together and then you have a mini event, like a mini cosmic event, right? And so, yeah, Guardians, Love and Thunder, maybe something else, all kind of tie together, but they don't really have much to do with Black Panther, or they don't have much to do with Ant-Man at this point in time. And so there's going to be connectivity across some movies, but not all of them. You can watch Eternals, No Way Home, and then whatever else, Love and Thunder, and really not have to depend on watching it in that sequence. And so I'm kind of cool with that for now. Let's like you said, there's almost too much to connect together into a single narrative now. Like, you're not just playing with like five characters, you're playing with like 40 at once.
Well, and then you start to handcuff yourself, right?
Yeah.
And it's like somebody could have a great take, or Kevin Feige's brain trust be inspired by whatever. I'll use Ghost Rider again, and we want to do Ghost Rider and we have something really cool to do, but it's like, well, no, this isn't the story that we're telling right now, so we have to wait 5, 10, 15 years to do it. Well, no. And now that opens it up a bit more and gives you a bit more latitude to throw in little projects here and there, kind of like how they've done Moon Knight. Like, if Moon Knight connects to something later on, great. If it's its own one and done show, great. If it's just a series that we get 6 episodes of every year or so, great. Like, I think that that's the way you need to be with these things. And especially with so many competing properties, right?
Yeah, it's a lot out there, and I think this really speaks, this whole conversation, to the why they haven't announced an Avengers 5, because there's no plans for it. They're doing a lot of this singular storytelling for now. We're going to get another Avengers film. We're taking a break from it from a bit. Might not see something till 25, 26, where we get a young Avengers or something to that effect, but this like grander idea, the Infinity Saga, it's on hold for now from what I can see. And last time I talked to Kevin Feige, that's what he's telling me, so...
Yeah, exactly. And like I said, if they totally mess everything up, they always have the X-Men behind that glass.
Break in case of bad Rotten Tomato score. Now, speaking of the characters that they have on the back burner here, Fantastic Four. This is a big property that we're all anticipating to come out. And it did have a director, and that director was the man that was behind the Sony-led Spider-Man MCU version, and that being John Watts here. He was slated to jump over to Marvel Studios proper and bring Fantastic Four back into the limelight, back into the popular discussion with a full reboot. But it looks like John Watts and Marvel Studios have amicably split, and John Watts will no longer be directing Fantastic Four. Now, I say amicably because that was an important note that both of them put out there. And whether it's true or not, I don't know. But it sounds like John Watts was just like, I've been doing this for a decade. I can't direct or dedicate another 3-4 years to a Fantastic Four movie. I got to go do something different. So I can respect that out of John Watts, right? You spent so much time developing and delivering just a fantastic trilogy inside of the Spider-Man or the MCU Spider-Man. And you take shooting plus post-production plus all the promo, you're looking at north of 2+ years per film, and maybe even more. And so, yeah, John Watts leaving Fantastic Four. I don't know where this leaves Fantastic Four. We don't have a date. We know it's been announced. They will likely have no issue finding a director. And we need a cast, but I don't think it changes much for Fantastic Four. Does it change your hype at all with John Watts departing?
No. And you know, we all know that he left so that he can go direct Fast X.
Yes,
because
of course.
No,
that's your boy from the Hulk movie that's directing that.
Yeah, Louis Leterrier got that job. And man, I really like that guy, and I feel sorry for him having to work with Vin Diesel and Tyrese. That's all I'll say on that. But you know, Ian might unsubscribe if I besmirch the Fast and Furious movies anymore. The Fantastic Furious. That'll be what it is when Watts moves in there. But no, it doesn't change my hype level at all. I do think it's a bit interesting that he was just the Sony Spider-Man guy. Mm. And that this was going to be his first foray into doing Marvel proper, and he moves off. But like you said, it makes sense. Like, he's dedicated a decade of his life, and he's accumulated a ton of credibility with doing those Spider-Man movies. So, yeah, you know what? He came from that indie auteur space, so I can see a guy like that saying, you know what, I've proven myself on the big stage, on the biggest stage, quite frankly, and I can always come back to it if I need to, but let me go out there and do some other things. Like, on a directing level, it might kind of be akin to Robert Pattinson, right? Where it's like, I did the big franchisey stuff, so let me go do a bunch of things in the art space, and if and when I decide to come back, I'll come back. But Marvel Studios will get an equally capable director to hammer out the Fantastic Four, and of that I'm sure. And I can't wait for it.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. So, well, man, let's wrap this one up with one thing. I gotta ask you one question here before we depart and head over to our Week in Nerd. Last thoughts, man, before we see Multiverse of Madness.
I don't know. I've actually, like I said last week, I've totally stepped back from everything. I've muted all the multiversal terms that could influence my viewing experience. And despite that, like, come on, folks, like, how has so many spoilers crossed my eyes despite and not being on my phone very much, and also having like pretty much everything I could think of muted in relation to Doctor Strange. But to be honest, like, my hype has probably gone up a little bit because I've heard that it's a lot more low key than people were expecting, and it's a lot more Sam Raimi than people were expecting, which are both positives for me. If you've listened to two episodes of this show, you'll know that. So yeah, my hype level has gone up. The trailer that I saw a nauseating amount of times, because I went to go see the Batman in theaters a nauseating amount of times, sold me. Like, I love the visuals, I love the aesthetic of it, and I love Doctor Strange. So who knows, maybe I won't shave for a couple days, grow facial hair that makes my wife's toes curl, and wear my Eye of Agamotto that she gave me for her anniversary a couple years ago, and off we go.
Well, there you go. There's the Red Band trailer for the Nerd Room. I will say, man, hype level is pretty high for me. It's an MCU film, of course. I've done the same as you. I've muted a lot of stuff. But one thing I wanted to bring up here, Marvel Studios, a direct comment, or not even a comment. This is their bio right now because of all the spoilers that are leaking out there. So if you're spoiling stuff, stop it. Stop being that person. But Marvel Studios bio on Twitter right now is, find out in theaters, not online. Replies disabled. Marvel Studios Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness in theaters Friday. Get tickets now. That's their bio.
Hilarious. That's
so
hilarious.
Stop spoiling stuff.
Oh, man. And it is dumb, the things that people are spoiling, like really cool things. Like, I guess there was a TV spot or a trailer that let loose a whole pile of the goodies. So people were just posting GIFs from that trailer, but the images are unmistakable as to what they are, right? So you're kind of innocently scrolling along 4 or 5 days before the movie opens. You shouldn't be getting spoiled, but there you are. And then, yeah, it's been silly with just even people from bona fide outlets or people who are invited to the premieres and stuff like that. So it's like, yeah, like you said, stop spoiling. You were given access and blessed with something that everybody mm-hmm. else doesn't have. Like, why do that? Like, why ruin it for other people?
Be giving it to us, because I can tell you, my lips would be sealed, Mr. Feige. I would not be spoiling anything. I've had a few of those unfortunate things, and I just have chalked them up to, this is fake, and I'll experience it in the movie. So there it is, guys. There's a pile of stories there that we ran down inside of all of our favorite franchises, Star Wars, Marvel, DC, and of course, a bit of the beyond. But we're going to skip over to a condensed version of our Week in Nerd this week, because again, it has been very, very quiet for me as some other things are happening that I will reveal very, very soon, but not quite yet. So let's over to the plastic side of this conversation in our Week in Nerd. Okay, guys, here we are in our favorite segment of the week, a relatively condensed version of it, as the plastic has been thin, has not been producing for me lately, but maybe that is a good thing, taking a little bit of a pre-summer break before the onslaught of the next wave of Marvel Legends. But Carlos, as we get into our weekend nerd, where we talk about all our plastic pickups, how we are feeding that plastic anxiety, anything to pick up, anything to report on the finds this week?
Man, no, I literally had the commitment to myself, like Friday night, Saturday morning, I was like kind of planning out my days. I was like, you know what? I'm not going to go on the hunt this weekend. I'm going to play it cool. And, you know, I certainly touched a lot of Black Series boxes, but that was just packaging them up to put away in my garage finally. And I was like, yeah, you know what? And like when you're putting stuff away, I find that it very much satiates that need to go out and get anything new, because you're just like, oh god, I'm running out of space. I don't know where I'm gonna put all this stuff. So yeah, it's usually a pretty good bomb for stopping one from going on the hunt. But picked up my kid from dance and take her over for a bit of an early dinner, and then I get a text from my wife saying, hey, do you mind running to Staples and making some copies for me? And I was like, okay, yeah, no problem. So we go up to Staples, and there's a GameStop right there. So I was like, right here, got to wait for this stuff to get printed off. So might as well poke our head in there. And poke my head in there, looking through the figures. I was like, oh, it's cool. Like, no new McFarlanes that I need. And as I gaze up, no plastic, but some cold cast resin. As for whatever reason, this random GameStop in the smallest one in my half of the city had the Batman black and white statue by Todd McFarlane. And I had ordered this thing like a couple years ago through my local comic book store, and they got stiffed on the order. And like through the pandemic and everything else, like there was a few friends online, like guys like Javi, that got theirs, but they're after massive, like over a year long delay type of thing. And I was like, oh, you know what? I'll stay with Words and Pictures and just kind of hold out hope. And if I don't get it, I don't get it. And one of the other stores in town got it. And I was like, if they got it, my boy should get it. And they never did. So after a year or so, nothing. Went to the expo. And ironically, I took a picture with my kid in it. There's a retailer that had it for $800. And I just snapped a picture with my kid kind of giving a cheeky look. And I sent it to my wife. I actually sent it to Tim too. And I was like, hey, you can get this for my birthday. Knowing what the price tag was on it. But for less than 20% of that cost, like this smoke show GameStop price, I ended up landing that statue from them. Like, beauty, mint condition. Like, I freaking love it. Like, I just wanted to open it up in my trunk because this thing was just so cool.
Is it real? Is it actually in the box?
Yeah. And man, I it was meant to be, obviously, unplanned. And really, my dear wife, if you're listening, it is your fault. If I didn't have to go do the copying, I wouldn't have been there.
Why did it cost 3, 4, 5 times as much to get this? Just put it on the company card.
Yeah, but it's cool. I'm very happy to have it, and just being a fan of Todd McFarlane and his touches in the DC universe, and certainly that year 2 storyline. I'm happy to have the statue in the collection kind of thing. And there was a time where I'd been pretty close to having them all, and then I realized that I was buying a pile of them without actually liking the statues just for the sake of completing them. So I sold off a lot of the collection, but it's neat to have this one because it's like the 100th one that they did type of thing. So I've got like a curated set of like a quarter of them now is what it works out to. And it's the this being the 25th one, but the 25 that I actually quite love or have a connection to the artist with. So
yeah, very cool. I love how you had one of those moments. It's like, I gotta text everyone that will give a shit about this. And I got this text. It was like boom boom. I was like, what?
I know. Well, it's just so crazy. Like, what are the chances? What are the chances of finding something like that?
It's fate, man. Fate that it is bestowed upon you. Not only was Uncle Todd looking out for you, but the Batman as well.
Yeah, totally. Totally. Uncle Todd and the Batman. Just yeah. And then I went to church on Sunday. Like, that's just the trifecta right there.
The Holy Trinity looking after you there. Yeah, man. Like, I was living vicariously through you on that one this whole weekend. I've not had an opportunity, the time, or anything to get out on the hunt. But given that it is the month of Star Wars, I've got a little itchiness for the Power of the Force and Episode 1 figures. I've done a couple live streams, and I'm just, like, in love with these 3 3/4 inch figures. And so I think that's what we're going to have to do. That's going to be my little treat to myself, because I'm not going to Celebration. I'm going to go buy a whole bunch of 3 3/4 inch figures from Marty's or something.
It's such an ideal thing to have in the back pocket, right? Like, it's great, they're always there.
Yeah.
They're never expensive. And yeah, you can just enjoy yourself with a few of these figs. It's funny because I guess today was the anniversary of the Phantom Menace figures coming out. And yeah. Somebody had shared pictures of what Toys R Us looked like with people having Phantom Menace mania.
So different. There's so much red Phantom Menace stuff all over the place. And if you want to hear more Phantom Menace talk, you can go check out our YouTube channel where myself, Ryan Dole, and Mark Tarkin did a live stream a couple weeks ago talking about the toys of the Phantom Menace. So get in that Star Wars mood and head over to our YouTube channel, because I also put up, in celebration of this month and May the 4th in particular, I just put up my Star Wars collection tour on our YouTube channel as well. So I detail my what is probably at the order of like 15, 20 years worth of curated collecting. It's not obsessive crazy, but it is a nice little decent collection that I put together with some really meaningful stuff in there. And Star Wars has always been near and dear as my first collection love. And it will always have a piece in my grander nerd room, of course. And so go check that out on YouTube if you're looking for a little bit of extra Star Wars content throughout the month as you anticipate the debut of Obi-Wan and Star Wars Celebration, all the fun that we're going to have this month inside of Star Wars. But I guess with all of those news stories behind us, man, it's time to wrap this one up. And if you'd like to be a bigger part of these shows or news or show us off your Star Wars collection, you can always email us at thenerdroom@gmail.com. You can find everything we do over thenerdroom.net. The hunt is real, and it's sometimes over on Instagram at thenerdroom over there, and then YouTube. As I mentioned, we're putting lots of videos up. We got some new shorts coming, some figure reviews that are going to align nicely with Doctor Strange. We've got the collection tours up there, Marvel Legends, Star Wars. Ian just posted a Spider-Man classic suit hot toy. So all kinds of content going up there, guys. Go give us a subscribe. Thumbs up to those videos. Throw some comments at us. Have some fun over there. And of course, Twitter. We'll probably be off it for the majority of the weekend until we see the Multiverse of Madness. But our handles are at the end of the episode. If you would like to tag us, get a hold of us, use hashtag WeTheNerd, and we are there chatting. So, Carlos, with all that news behind us, with Moon Knight, Multiverse of Madness, and all sorts of Star Wars, DC, Beyond Love in front of us.
I know, man. This was crazy. Like, we actually do a little bit of finagling to get this episode together. Mm-hmm. And yeah, a bit of an early record, but Tim's like, man, I need to have it done. And you know, I moved some things and I said, Tim, you want to get nuts?
Let's get nuts. All right, dude. For the Nerd Room, I'm Tim.
And I'm Batman.
And thank you so much for entering the Nerd Room. This has been a Nerd Room podcast production. You can find our hosts Tim, Troy, Sanjay, and Carlos on Twitter at TheNerdRM, TroyTheBoy87, Sanjabi, and CDN Caped Crusade R. For more content from The Nerd Room, check out TheNerdRoom.net.
And don't forget to subscribe to The Nerd Room on iTunes, Podbean, Spotify, or wherever you plug in. Use the hashtag WeTheNerd to keep up with the latest from The Nerd Room on Instagram and Twitter.
We'll be right back.